Dang it. What was I saying? The human dongle.
Oh, get your finger out of my eye.
Way better now that you've stopped touching it.
Yes, I was...
Oklahoma, where the wind comes sweeping down the plain, and the waving wheat can sure smell sweet when the wind comes right behind the rain.
Shaka-bam!
Welcome back to Okla Said. It is the official Okla Ed podcast. It's good to see you again, sir. You're wearing your iPad Palooza shirt.
I am. Moment of silence because I don't believe there's going to be one this year. Or if there is, I haven't heard about it.
Are you going to shut up so we can do the moment of silence?
Sorry. All right. And that concludes our moment of silence. Hey, you know what? A super fast shout out to Kristen Atchley.
For what?
Well, she said that whenever you're in a sad mood, you should just listen to the Okla Said podcast because your snort at the beginning immediately cheers her up.
I saw that, and that was pretty stinking sweet.
It's also funny because I have... on occasion considered redoing the opening little intro, but every time I listen to it, I'm like, nope, it's got to stay.
I'm kind of the same way because the snort is fine with me. I snort all the time, but for some reason, whatever clip you took of that laugh, it makes me sound like Roseanne Barr. And like, you know how she finishes the intro song for the show. It's been a million years since I've seen it, but I don't know. It's just,
well,
it's,
I think
you
when
got
I,
it out of me.
I did, and I think when I got that one, you were in like full on fit of giggles.
Well, yeah, obviously, because I just laugh like that all the time.
Yeah. So thank you, Kristen.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Kevin Heim hosted this Twitter chat. It was really good. He had some good questions here, but we have no idea what to name this chat. So what'd you come up with?
I came up with From Teaching to Learning.
So yeah, that was the most specific way I think you could have named his synopsis.
Right, because we kind of went all over the place from a variety of things, but it ultimately landed with, as educators, continuing to learn.
Yes.
So, absolutely. So I thought that was good. And Kevin, if you don't like the name of it, let us know and we'll update it.
If you get it to us soon enough. anyway, so, well, do you want to dive in? Question one.
Yes, let's do.
Okay. What does the shift from teaching to learning look like to you and in your school? That's a good question. Because teaching does not equal learning.
No. And just because I say doesn't mean you do.
Exactly. I did like what Dr. Jason James had to say here. He said the shift from teaching to learning looks like a building full of people who understand their profession is about students, performance, and not just theirs. Mm-hmm. Which I thought, you know, a lot of times... we're either hyper-focused on ourselves and our craft or hyper-focused on the students. And it should be a beautiful mix of all of that together. And the administrator, you know, coming in and making sure they are leading in a way that is developing the teachers so that they can develop the minds of these little kiddos or big kiddos.
Right. I think too, when it comes to teaching and learning and things like that, as teachers, there's that balance of understanding that we have to continually learn as well, because things are different. Like we shouldn't be teaching the same way that we taught 10 years ago.
Right.
There's new things to try. There's new things to consider, and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, but also we shouldn't just cater to every single need of a student, even though that may sound counter revolutionary. I mean, we need to consider students a lot. But we can't cater to every single need because at some point in time, as students, they turn into goobers, and there's some needs that we just can't fulfill as teachers. God bless them all.
I concur.
You're right. I went with Twyla Hester. She was in chat, and hey, guess what?
What?
Twyla is the new principal, I think she said, in Newcastle.
Ooh, exciting. Yeah. I missed her on the Twitters for a while, or was I really just blind?
I think she's been in and out. So when I first found Oakland, Twyla was there a lot.
Yeah.
And then she was working on some graduate stuff, and she wasn't there as much. And so I was excited to see her back this past week.
Yeah, me too.
But she said her answer, and she's at Twyla Hester, she said, shifting from teaching to learning moves teachers from lecturers to guides. Student-centered, not teacher-centered. And I think that last sentence is huge. Student-centered, not teacher-centered. What's best for students, what helps the students learn, not what I as a teacher am most comfortable with.
Right. And there was talk of comfort later on. Mm-hmm. And I almost picked a tweet, and then I was like, but this one just is a little bit, you know, more about what I want to talk about, but we'll get to that later. We talk about comfort later.
Right. So question two, define PLC. What are the types for PLC to be effective?
Okay, and I don't understand what are the types. So can you tell me about this? Is this lingo that I just haven't heard?
Here's how I interpreted that. The tights meaning, what are the things that we have to have? Like, what are your non-negotiables?
Okay.
That's how I interpreted it. That's how I went with it. I could be a little off, but...
See, tights in my world right now are like leggings, but not quite. And so it's like,
but sort of.
Metaphorically speaking, the tights, I wasn't making the connection.
It keeps all your muscles together when you run.
So what is a PLC in your opinion?
So I think this would be I would just go with a professional learning community, is how I would view that. And then I would view that as all of the folks that I, work with, talk with, communicate with the specific purpose of improving myself as an educator.
Okay.
Now my role is different now because I'm not necessarily in the classroom 100% of the time working with a specific teaching team.
Okay.
So, does that make sense?
Yes.
So if I was in a school, my PLC might more firmly be those folks that I have to work with every day to help with my students' learning. What about you?
I too agree with whatever's going to develop me professionally. So my PLC or PLN, can those be interchanged?
I think you can make an argument they could be.
Okay. Mine sits across the state. I do have some people within my school. So maybe PLC is within your school and PLN is anywhere, anybody that makes you grow.
Okay. No? I could go for that.
Okay. So my PLC is tight. Things that we have to be effective. And it kind of goes into Stephanie Hinton's definitely a positive attitude, a positive approach. Don't trash talk students while you're in there. I hate more than anything when somebody hijacks a little, you know, meeting and starts just bad mouthing, you know?
Right.
So for me to have an effective PLC, it's got to stay up and up, and we got to talk about best practices.
Right. Like what can improve your student learning?
That's the move.
Sorry. Okay. All
right, Stephanie Hinton, she did say professional learning community, they look a lot different in ways, but ultimately they are student focused, data driven, solutions oriented, positive. And I was like, well, that just said it all. So
That's a good one because your PLC, because you're virtual, is going to look different than somebody that's in a brick and mortar.
Yeah. Yeah.
But they're still, the ultimate goal is the same of both of those. Help your students improve. And exactly. Help yourself improve.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I went with Todd Gregg here. He's at Mr. Gregg. He said, the people that sharpen my iron as an educator.
Yes.
Yeah. You got to be around those people. I know that when I've worked in buildings where when I look around and I go, dang, these teachers are good. It makes me up my game. And there's been a building or two that I've been in where I haven't felt that way. So that tweet really spoke to me because.
You know, I wonder if. You and I, you know, we go to an ed camp and we get all the warm fuzzies while we're there. Mm-hmm. Because we get to meet up with our PLN while we're there.
Maybe.
You know, like, man, at one time I was like, oh my goodness, how many ed camps can be in Oklahoma? You know, because there were like ed camps everywhere. And I thought, are they going to lose their effectiveness? But every time I showed up to one, I was like, my people are here. And so maybe those ed camps are the PLCs for our PLNs. And that's why you and I get all the warm fuzzies whenever we go.
Oh, maybe so.
You know?
I hadn't thought about it that way, but you could be correct.
Yeah. Well, question three. Define collective teacher efficacy. How do you build efficacy? And I was like, Google efficacy.
So I just did that so we can all have a working definition of the word efficacy, because it's one that's used frequently, but I think it's one that people make different assumptions about what it means.
Okay.
Right? Is that a fair statement, you think?
No, I do. I think yes.
So according to dictionary.com, efficacy means the ability to produce a desired or intended result. So, okay. Collective teacher efficacy.
Right. Okay. And so that was good. And I was like, because whenever I looked it up, it was like having the ability to be effective.
Yeah.
And so different definitions or whatever. But I was like, man, am I a goof here? Am I talking about? Anyway, I didn't know. So I was just trying to look for the prettiest tweet. No, I'm just kidding. I went with Vicki Donnelly here because I was in the same boat as she was. It was like, if she wrote efficiency, because which is, you know, maybe a slight variation of efficacy, work together for a shared goal. I'm learning tonight. And I was like, hey, me too, sister. Like, I'm learning as well.
Right. And so if you kind of keep in mind, a desired or intended result, then that does mean you got to work together. You can't not have success without people sort of, you know, it's sort of like a river. A river's got to roll towards the ocean, but at different points along that river, people can be going in a little bit of a different direction, but they're generally flowing the same way.
You know, a dream is like a river. It's changing as it flows.
I was thinking a river of dreams.
And Brandon a dream is just a vessel that must follow where it goes. Would you stop doing this to me? I can't,
Garth
like,
Brooks. All right.
I'm nearly going nuts just to let you finish.
You know, it's like life is a highway.
It's life is a highway.
Yes. So I went with Adam Beauchamp here. He's at Beauchamp_Adam.
Beauchamp.
I was afraid you're going to turn that one into Mr. Bojangles, but I'm glad you didn't.
Bojangles.
Good Lord. And he said the belief in the self and team that we can accomplish our goals. It might be difficult, but that is where the joy is. A sense of accomplishment is the greatest feeling in the world. Actually helping others gain a sense of accomplishment is the best feeling in the world.
Yes.
Yeah. I love that.
We get the feelings in there.
We get the feels. So define RTI. Share a successful RTI program in your school. Now,
okay, so I was actually really pleased because I was like, oh, RTI, here it is in my world. I think in my school, so much emphasis is placed on RTI as like, oh, that's the first path to special ed.
Well, let's give a definition. What is RTI?
Response to intervention.
Okay.
Okay. So I think it's thought of as the first step to special ed because like they, you know, they're not performing well enough or something. They're not hitting a mark.
Yeah.
But I was really pleased in that. I think my definition or what, my school is doing is actually behind here, and you won't find me knocking my school very often because I really do like it, but with everyone's definitions that I was reading through, I was so pleased that nobody was really thinking special ed. It was like, how do we get in and how do we fill these holes? And I was so pleased with Okla Ed with this question, just so you know, because I know it's not the first step to special ed, but whenever I talk with my teachers, it just seems like it's like, got this negative connotation around it, and they're worried that, you know, that's the first step to a kid getting on an IEP. And I was like, these letters have different meanings, and they should be completely separate from each other.
That's not where my mind goes right away either.
No, I know. So I was really pleased that I was off, or my you know, the people in my school, and I don't think my administrators want it to be like that at all. I just think that's where my where the teachers collectively sit, is like, all right, RTI is the process to get into special ed.
But if your teachers are collectively sitting there, though, that's an administration issue, because that's something that needs to be addressed, because it really isn't the first step towards special education.
No, you're totally right. And so what I'm saying is, I was like really pleased to see all the tweets here, because it is definitely a community issue within us. So Kristen Ashley, she said, RTI can and should be about the whole child and whole school. This is not just, are they scoring or assessing at the right level? What's the barrier? Emotional, mental, social, academic, medical, et cetera. And like, there could be so many reasons for the Swiss cheese that's going on inside, you know, their head, or the holes in their education.
Right.
And so I really like that. Yeah. To figure out the whole picture before, you know, putting some interventions in place.
Yeah, that I really like her tweet on that. I went with Kimberly Blodgett, and she said, RTI response to intervention, catching learning/behavior needs early on for student success. A successful RTI program is one that is continuously training teachers and staff, one that sets students up for success, shows up daily for the session.
I love it. That's, yes, perfect.
Yeah, it's all about, and I've seen different teachers react to things in different ways, and I know we had a specific program at Memorial. I don't remember what it was called exactly, but I've seen a variety of things where you start off with basically the least intrusive form of intervention with the student, just maybe a couple supports here and there, and until you get all the way to, like, we're really diving in with this kid now, like, we're laying hands on. we're calling in all the reinforcements.
Yes.
And you just kind of slowly build till you can help that student get over whatever the hump is that's causing them the issues preventing them from learning.
Yeah. Well, question five. Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with John Hattie, his collective research? What do you like, agree, and what question or dislike when reading his meta-analysis? And I was like, I know the name because Dr. Laura and Josh Flores were like kind of going nuts at our dinner table, and I was like, I must look it up. So it's still in my notes of things to look up. So I don't know much about him. I was learning on this as well, and picked Natasha Jefferson so that I could shout out. We don't all know who this person is, but we're adding him to our list.
I know that he's done a lot of meta-analysis, so he's taken a lot of studies of interventions on that teachers have used as part of the education process, and he's looked at thousands of studies and tried to put together the effect sizes of each of these interventions, basically.
Yeah.
And so that's where he started. I guess the one thing that I would toss out here as a maybe a potential dislike is that sometimes everybody drinks Kool-Aid without understanding how the Kool-Aid is made.
Yeah.
And here recently we've had this whole kerfuffle with Marzano, you know, and some stuff that he shared on social media. And I think at the heart of what Marzano is saying all those decades ago is probably some good stuff.
But we're all a little Marzano'd out.
But now we're here, and he made some stuff, made a comment that people are grumpy about. And so I'm just leery of things like, everybody says, this is what Hattie says, this is how we should do it. Or this is what Marzano says, this is what we should, how we should do it. Or even like people that I like to follow on Twitter, this is what this edgy thinker says, we should do it. And I think we should question all of these practices. We should try and understand how the meat is made, as it were.
Yes.
Now, having said all that, Hattie's got some interesting stuff.
Well, and I will be diving in August.
That's in August. You got a plan.
Well, not in July. That's for darn sure. So for those of you that don't know, I am back in school, and I've taken two classes that span the month of July.
Mm-hmm. Is it going to stick this time?
What do you mean? In the program?
Yeah.
Yes, I'm going to stick.
Because I believe in you, Aaron.
I mean, here's the thing.
Oh.
And I'm going to get on a soapbox way off topic for just a second. Okay. And if I'm wrong, somebody tell me I'm wrong. And maybe the master's program is meant to just be like, you know, what is it? Why do you need to learn this in school? Well, it shows that you've got the process of learning down. I don't know. I just felt like the master's program was something I was just paying for and getting through.
Right.
There was no challenge. And that's part of the reason I quit it before. It was like, no real challenge, no need to do this. And so I quit. But now, obviously, I need to finish so that I can further myself where I'm at.
Right.
So I'm going to finish, yes. But I still have the feeling, like I said something and challenged something in class just the other day. And my husband, I was telling him about it. He's like, don't get into trouble. And I was like, well, if I'm paying for this, then I'll just say it the way I want to say it, which sounds horrible. And it's not as if I was being anti, you know, anything. But right. I just think that there are more than one way to look at something. And so I was just bringing up a different version. But I'm going to pay for this class and I'm going to do the work, which means I'm going to get the A at zero challenge. Is that horrible? Tell me I'm horrible.
You should always be challenged, especially if you're in graduate school.
Right. Which is why I quit the first time.
Maybe you're in the wrong program.
Maybe. But from what I hear, it's like one of the better. So, but I hopefully will be challenged in an EDD or PhD program. You were.
Yes, I was in a lot of ways. And I really think that for those that have the opportunity, that can really grow you professionally.
Well, and see, that's where I was like, maybe I'll get my national board certification, because that sounded like it grew some people.
That'll grow you too.
Yeah, but national board certification does not equal a leadership program.
No, you can't. You can't be a national board certified and just come in and be an administrator.
Right.
Yeah.
Anyway, so
okay,
that's it. Sorry.
Back to Hattie and his thing. So I went with Dawn Collins. She's at Collins_Dawn. She said, "I love the fact that relationships are shown to be truly the most effective aspect of student success. Could there be any better argument for how important teacher efficacy is?"
Ooh.
I think relationships are super important.
Yeah.
Because it makes a difference. Like, I don't know. I just think of, in my own world, people that I have a good relationship with, I'm willing to go the extra mile for. People that I don't, I'll be polite and be like, I'll get to it. And then maybe or maybe not.
Right. Right. Rigor, so, relevance, relationship. Isn't that Bill Daggett?
I don't know. I think rigor is overused a lot. Yeah. Needs to be relevant. But anyway, question 6. Hattie's report has teacher expectations as the number one factor when it comes to student learning. How do you raise your expectations for all students?
I posted something about like getting rid of rubrics and setting up expectation checklists.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this is what I love about our Oakland Ed PLN. Sometimes it's a preaching to the choir, but sometimes people are like, you know what? I'm challenging you on this. Right. And I think it was Natasha or Talanya.
It's Talanya.
Okay. Talanya was like, you know what, EB? I'm challenging you on this. Let's get together and let's talk about why rubrics are better than checklists. And I was like, you know what? I'll do that. I'll meet with you because
I'll say something contrary to have a meeting with Talanya. I love her.
Okay, Talanya, let's do this. No, but like, I guess, and I was using it based on my own experience from the past. Anytime a rubric was given to me, I was like, all right, what's the, you know, path of least resistance to a passing grade?
Right. What do I need to do to get the A?
Or B? I don't care. B.
And I think that's the issue. And what Talanya said in that exchange between you guys was a well-written rubric. So for those of you that can't see the podcast, Aaron just made the international sign for please bring me a cup of coffee. And apparently Aaron's mug is huge. but her point was a well-written rubric, because I think a lot of times we're working with unwell-written rubrics.
Apparently, yeah.
Because I myself am not a huge rubric fan, because I don't want to eliminate a possible thing that I didn't think of. And so maybe that's a shortcoming of my own rubric writing skills.
When's the next ed camp? Do you know?
Saturday.
Is it?
No, I have no idea.
Yeah.
No, but you
mean... I'm sure there's one somewhere in the United States on Saturday.
Listen, one that you and me and Talanya can get to.
Well, who says we have to have an ed camp?
No, you're right. But other people could benefit from this conversation.
We could do a live Oklahoma podcast.
Well, live Oklahoma podcast, yes, always. But write a session on the board that is rubrics or checklists.
Mm-hmm.
You decide. And then have the debate. I like that idea.
Yeah. I don't know when the next Oklahoma ed camp is.
Okay. Well, we'll figure it out and we'll let you know. I went with Shane Sanders on this one. And he said, after spending time making connections with students, the deposits you've made by doing will allow you to challenge students at their own level to increase their own expectations of learning. Mm-hmm. And I like that. I love giving students ownership as much as possible. If you've been to any of my sessions over the last couple of years, you hear a lot about student ownership. So,
yeah, that's important. So I went with Sherry Gately here, and she's at Sherry Gately. She said, every decision I make begins with, if this isn't good enough for my own children, it isn't good enough for any child. I only want what is best for my kids. So that is what my students get. High expectations are easy when you make it personal.
Yes, I love that, Sherry. Perfect.
After I had my own children, I started thinking the same thing. Like, would I want my son or daughter in my class?
That's
selfishly.
Ask. No.
You know what I mean? But like, would I want them in here?
Right. And it changes perspective if you do make it personal. I love that. Sherry. Well, 6B.
So if you are an admin, what are your expectations for teachers, and do you raise the bar?
Yes, raise the bar. I am new, so I was learning here. I didn't want to throw anything out there because I'm a month in right now, you know?
Yeah.
So I went with the Twyla Hester tweet here, and I saw later that you boom sauced this one, so okay. I'm letting the cat out of the bag. But it really was a great tweet. She says, it's easy to become stagnant if you don't stretch yourself. As admin, you've got to model lifelong learning and continual growth so that T's will do likewise. They'll move that down to the S's. So, I mean, if administrators are modeling lifelong learning and teachers are modeling lifelong learning, then hopefully a student grasps like, hey, learning may be a little important here.
One of my favorite administrators had a saying, you know, school motto and school, you know, all these different, you know, like things that you have to do to check off the box as far as some of these things. And she's like, our school motto is this: higher levels of learning for all. For all. And so she modeled that. And the expectation was for staff to participate in that. And the expectation was that students would participate in that. So it just went on down. It just went on down, on down, on down. And I thought, man, that is perfect. I mean, one sentence.
Yeah. That's really good.
So, anyway, Stephanie Hinton said, I think this is a really important practice that we often forget about. It's the same with our teachers. It is important to have high expectations, believe in their capabilities, and be prepared to provide assistance if needed or requested.
Yeah.
So there you go.
There you go. Question 7. Student expectations and teacher feedback are at the top of Hattie's list every year. Share your thoughts and how you encourage students to believe in themselves and collaborate with students.
So, funny story.
Do it.
Feedback. Instantaneous feedback is a gamification technique. And you learn when you're given feedback right away what to do and what not to do.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. Feedback is so important. And if you're constantly getting feedback, then you're constantly able to grow.
Right.
Back to your gamification thing. Like, I have slightly become addicted to Limbo again. That game that I was telling you about. Did you download it on your phone?
No. Okay, I'm looking it up right now. Just go ahead and talk.
I think it's $3.99, so I apologize. But you gotta pay. You get instant feedback. You either die, or you move past the checkpoint. And, like, there have been times this last week that I've been like, wow, like shouting, you know, and Travis is like, what the heck? And sorry, I got past the spider. You know, and if you get that instant feedback, good or bad.
Okay, I just bought it.
Oh, yay!
$3.99, price of a cup of coffee.
Go out and buy Limbo. You've got to learn. Anyway, it's not about learning at all. It's learning how to problem solve. You've got to problem solve because I'm not going to give away too much, but there are times when you pass a box, you know, go into your next checkpoint. And then you realize, like, oh, I got to go back and get that box to get past this checkpoint. Mm. So you got to use different things that are around you. So you really have to problem solve. And it takes you dying 14 times in the same manner to realize, oh, I got to figure this out differently. Anyway.
Instant feedback.
Feedback. Don Collins says, It is amazing what can be accomplished with honest conversations. Share their struggles and celebrate their successes. And I agree 100%. Honest feedback, honest conversations. Kids don't want just like a, you're doing great too. And we've talked about this. Like, I hate that you're doing great. I want to know what you think I did great at and where I could improve. Like, you're great is fine, but it doesn't help me grow.
What does it mean?
Exactly.
So I went with Alan Lehman. He's at Alan_Lehman. He said, some students see my discipline as a brick wall. My job is to find some way for even the most challenged to find some sort of foothold in which to believe and then capitalize on that. And I like that because, you know, sometimes in a really disciplined class, there's growth that happens based off of that structure. Like, I don't think it would work for me personally, but I know teachers who are just super disciplined with what happens. And kids sometimes hate that, but then when you engage that student in conversation, well, what have you learned from Mr. or Mrs. So-and-so? And they start spouting off all this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes the hate is just the being challenged, but then you realize the being challenged was the best thing after all.
Yeah. Or the students will be like, oh, well, Mr. Lehman, he hates my guts. Well, why would you say that? Well, because his class is like XYZ. And I'm like, but just yesterday at lunch, he was saying that you were one of the best kids he's ever taught. I mean, you know, sometimes the kids they conflate, you know, a structure like that with the teacher not liking them.
Right. No. You know, okay. So I was knocking grad school. My best class was probably the one I was like, the most about. It was a finance class, like school finance. And I thought the guy hated me. He was constantly, it felt like he was picking on me to like in ways that, I don't know, questions that nobody else was having to ask or answer.
And
I was like, oh my gosh, like this guy. And I was really like, this guy is the worst. He's always getting on to me. And on the last day, we had this, this like lunch. Everybody met up for lunch and kind of turned in their finals at lunch to get to know each other a little more. And, I had to leave and I was like, well, I'm out of here. He's like, you know what? It was such a pleasure having you in class. And I was like, was it though? Like, I really asked, was it though? You know, I don't challenge people, but if I'm paying for this piece of paper, I'm going to challenge. That's where I was in my head. And still, I guess I am. But I was like, I did not feel that it was great to have you in class all semester. And he's like, no, you were like one of the most thoughtful. And I thought, oh my gosh, like I had this 100% backwards. And I like know way more about my school and its finances than I ever did before because of him challenging me on it. But I really just felt like he was picking on me the whole time.
Because he's giving you good stuff to chew on.
Thank you for challenging me, Tom Pickens. Mm-hmm.
There you go. All right, question 7B.
Oh, how do you encourage teachers and raise self-expectations and give useful feedback? Stephanie Heim said here, I love to leave teachers notes of encouragement, drop by to see how things are going, and ask how can I help? And I thought that that was so great. Like, she just is such a thoughtful woman.
Yeah, that's a good one. I now went with Twyla Hester. She said, it all starts with relationships and feeling secure to take risks in learning. Admins, teachers, and students must have a supportive, positive climate in which to grow without consequence. Mistakes should be encouraged and allowed.
Yes.
So, Twyla, this tweet says to me, I will work for you.
Yes.
That's what it says.
Yeah.
And I love that because I feel like the year that I flipped my class and basically altered my professional trajectory, I had support from an administration who gave me the opportunity to try crazy new stuff and got support with that no matter how great it worked or didn't work.
Do you feel like you can say your administrator's name here?
Dr. Debbie Bendick and Mr. Justin Kofelt and team.
Listen, thank you. I'm saying thank you to those people as well, because I mean, if you hadn't been given the ability to make it different, right? And you were having to sit in the same box as everybody else and da 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 da, would you have done all of these professional development sessions for teachers who are now also kind of taking what you've done and doing it in their classrooms? Would you have gone on to get your PhD?
I wouldn't have gone on to get a PhD.
So, I mean, like, I so appreciate those people as well.
Yeah, I do too. I'm super, super thankful.
We should send them this podcast episode.
Okay, we'll do it.
Okay.
Question 8. Is your school kosher?
It is so kosher. We are like in fashion week all the time.
This handbag goes with these earrings. is your school culture based on making adults comfortable or creating an environment where all students can learn? How do we balance these dynamics? You know, I want to be challenged, but I want to be comfortable in that role. Does that make sense? Like, I don't want to be in a situation where I feel uncomfortable with trying to do things. I also don't want to be in a place where this is the worksheet I've used the past 15 years, and so I'm going to keep using it because it's so great. And so I don't want to be in that situation either. But I do want to be comfortable being challenged, and I want to be in a place where they allow that to happen in a safe and professional way.
Yeah, I mean, there's a difference between initiative fatigue, which we learned with, you know, Jason James, and pushing to grow and learn your craft. And I think that that's on the administrator to make sure the teacher is comfortably uncomfortable.
Right.
Has that. Yeah. Like supported in your risk taking, you know, but be uncomfortable in that you're taking risks to try to make things better always.
Right on.
All right. Well, I went with Dr. April Grace here. She says the push and pull that we so delicately have to balance in leadership. And see, she had already said it and I took her thunder. Helping teachers understand what students need to be successful, share data, research, etc. Teachers want success for themselves and their students. Create a safe place for teachers to take risks and try new strategies. Bang. I mean, she actually said it way better than I did.
Yeah.
I muffed it up.
I like her too. You know, she's the principal or the superintendent out there in Shawnee. She's because, you know, Shawnee sup.
Sup.
And my stepmother taught in Shawnee for a long time, so I wonder if they overlapped at all. I don't know.
Good question.
So, Dr. April Grace, if you know Mrs. Linda Hazelwood, let me know. Okay, good talk. So, I went with Talanya on this one, and she's at the NORFAR. She said, unfortunately, we are very into making adults comfortable. We have made some advances, but it is still heavily adult comfort. And nail, meet, hammer. Bam.
Preach!
Because, and I think this also comes back a little bit towards how our schools look as well. Like our, in a lot of classrooms, a teacher from the 1800s can walk in there and be comfortable. Now, I get that an overhead projector and a computer and some of that flashy stuff, you know, may be different, but the teacher's in the front, the students are in rows in the back. The teacher's doing the talking. The students are doing, you know what I'm saying? And so I think this speaks to me and the kind of positive disruption I want to, you know, stir.
So, but I almost went with an Aaron Baker tweet here, and I'm just going to go ahead and give it out if that's okay. Definitely not about comfort, but schools are still working places for educators. So important to continue protecting the rights of teachers post-Janus. And that's something going on in New York, I believe, with their union.
Okay.
Anyway, but I liked that because I see Aaron as a very controversial piece in the Oakland Ed world. And typically, like, he shouts out to people who are doing the easy road or not changing things up. And and sometimes that's the controversial piece, but he says it perfectly here. I'm definitely not about comfort, but this is still a place where teachers, you know, need to be protected. And I so appreciate that.
Yeah. And he's right there because, in some regards, teachers have the least amount of protections in the building.
Exactly.
So he's right on. But, and I really like this tweet too, but I think also that we have to balance that with the fact that we just can't allow teachers to be so protected they're comfortable in not teaching.
Exactly. And I think that is what he is saying.
Yeah. And he's, I believe also he's not advocating that because if you read him, he's very passionate. He's very passionate and I love him for it.
Yeah. Well, question 9, how would your classroom or school look different if grades were not allowed? Oh, I feel like we've had this conversation a few times. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure about getting rid of grades, but I like the idea of, growth and, mastery also. Mm-hmm. So I don't like that a kid can't redo a paper to get a better grade. If it's for the better grade, it drives me crazy. If it's to actually get the mastery of it, like, why not let them do it? But if, you know, and so part of me says, if you get rid of grades, the kid wants to do the paper again because he didn't do well and he wants to do well. But if the kid is just looking to get an A, then that's not the right motivation. And we could be a little more about growth.
But if a student wants to get an A and they resubmit that paper to get an A because they want an A and they do a better job on the paper, is that not growth?
See, we could be chasing our tails in this question. But
chicken or egg?
Alan Lehman says, I've thought about that for years, that grades as we use them are nothing more than educational currency. Students care a lot more about their grade than what they know. And that's, I mean, yep. That's what I was kind of saying. But again, everybody says things so much better than me. They're like better than me.
They like say it so like clear and like stuff.
And how am I on this podcast? I'm here for the comedy relief, obviously.
Yeah. totes relife. So I went with Kimberly Blodgett here, and she said, question 9 just made me smile, not going to lie. Okay, so maybe we can't get rid of all grades, but I do believe everyone should be doing standards-based grading. Yeah. ABCDF is so outdated and tells a parent or student nothing. They mean nothing. And you know what? She's right on here because, like, for example, in Edmond, and this is mini soapbox for me, but when it comes to valedictorian stuff, we have students that will take less challenging courses so they can get straight A's because the state of Oklahoma has said, if you're a valedictorian, you can have X number of dollars for scholarship money at your college. And so what happens? You have kids on the stage as a valedictorian who has taken every AP class offered, passed all the AP exams, is walking into their first year of college with like 40
right.
credits of coursework
right.
on the same stage with a student who did none of that. So, right. And why? Because they have the same grade. So tell me grades are important. And
right.
I say hogwash. In fact, I don't know that I could justify this, and I maybe shouldn't say this where I could be held to account here, but basically I taught a five-week-long course, and I really didn't use grades. I just looked at growth. Like, I looked at where my students started on the first night and where they finished on the last, and I basically graded them on that.
Oh!
Yeah. So, can I justify that they all got whatever grades? I can't, really. They jumped through all the hoops I'd set for them, but they also took risks that I didn't ask them to take. They did things I didn't ask them to do, and they were really good. They were really good by the end. Like, there's no way I could look at them at the end and go, well, that sucked. I mean, I couldn't. I go, my gosh, you guys are amazing considering where you came in. And that's the purpose, right?
Yes.
Woo! Okay, sorry. All right.
How would you teach if success was based on employment and income level of your students? I didn't answer.
That's how would you teach if you knew that that depending on how good of a teacher you were, your kids can make a lot more money?
Wow. I didn't find a tweet for this because I was not in the chat, and so it was hard to just search the Twitters on this one, but I like the one you came up with.
So I went with Nancy Williams, and she's at Nancy_N Williams. She said, I would do just what I'm doing now. I teach to make them the best they can be when they grow up. I want to give them opportunities, not barriers. And that last sentence, I want to give them opportunities, not barriers.
Right. Bam.
I know that... I don't ever want to be the teacher that told a student they couldn't. Because because then that'll be the student 10 years from now who's brilliant at whatever, and they'll be like, yeah, I had a teacher tell me I couldn't do that. And I don't want to be that teacher.
I try really hard
to not be that teacher.
Yeah.
So question 10, what is your evidence that students are learning?
Such a great question.
Yeah, this is a good one.
ABCD should not be the evidence.
A what?
ABCDEFG should not be the evidence.
No.
I went with Shannon Malo here. She said, going back to understanding by design, it's what the students accomplish at the end of the unit. They have to put every idea they learn together and apply it. It's all about if they can do it independently. And there again, it goes back to the ownership. If a student can regurgitate for a test, that's one thing. If a month later they can recall it because they applied it and were really working in it, that's a completely other thing.
So I had I teach instructional technology to future teachers.
Yes.
Kind of how to use it.
Yes.
And so I don't really give any tests in there because I want them to do things. And this lady, one of my students this past semester, she basically started off, I don't do selfies, I don't do video, I don't do this, I don't do this. And like anything on the phone scares me. I'm really paranoid and nervous. By the end, she had figured out how to use the website Binumi. So teachers, if you haven't explored that website, it's really cool. And using the website Binumi, she created a how-to video on making her world-famous chicken spaghetti something. And it was all about using video to help with the learning process.
I love that.
And so this is from a lady that had no desire to do any of that at the beginning. And I said, try out this platform. I didn't tell her how to use the platform. She's like, all right, I'll try it. I mean, it was amazing.
Can you send me that recipe?
It was a pretty good recipe. Because then she brought it and we ate it while she taught class. Seriously, that day.
That's
yeah.
Pretty, that's yeah. Really good.
It was like, really great.
The application.
Yep. So I went with Carol Peary here. She's at Carol Peary. She said, the evidence that my students are learning is that they can successfully demonstrate the expectation, goal, task, etc.
Yes. Demonstrate, not yep. regurgitate.
Yep. You could do it through an assessment or some other different form of assessment. It's all assessment, right?
Right. Right.
So how does it look? Does it look? Does it need to look like a multiple choice test, or does it need to, or can it look like something else?
And I guess maybe not everything can look like something else. You know, I may be wrong there, but I don't know. Anyway.
10B.
Yeah.
How do you access your students? What if grades were not allowed? And I think Kevin tweeted access, and he meant assess.
Assess. Okay.
That's what I
access my students via.
Yeah. So how do you assess your students?
Conversations. There are some, you know, ABCD tests that they must take. But for the most part, it's conversation and product. And they are putting out amazing products. I told you at OMLEA, we were asked to come and put on a professional development for yeah. you know, a school. Like, that product was something that other administrators found value in and said, hey, we want you guys to come teach us how to make that product.
Right.
And so the end product shows so much more. And then these kids have conversational skills out the wazoo now. You know, I love podcasting and video production. I love that kids can explain what they know, and so that is my biggest form of assessment.
Bang.
Yeah. But we've got blogs too, because some kids don't like their voice or to be on camera. So anyway, I went with Dina Rogers here, and she was so awesome to kind of challenge. I don't think she was being negative, but I think she's like, for real, like, how do you do this? And she did it on a couple of different tweets. She says, I actually have a question. If grades weren't allowed, how would students measure success? How do you set high expectations that Hattie suggests? Does a student keep doing the assignment until it's correct? And so I kind of say yes, but I get what she's saying, because then, I mean, if a kiddo got 15 tries to get an A and another kiddo, you know, did it the first time, do they get the same grade? You know,
I mean, part of me says yes. Achievers.
Her kiddos are high achievers. So I get the question. So what do you think?
I think this comes down to, we've always had letter grades, and that's how we've always done it. And that's what we're comfortable with.
Yeah.
And that's just how things work. Quote unquote work. And so she asked really good questions, but I think if there's, you know, like Kimberly's tweet with the standards based grading, I like that. It tells me where my student, it tells me where my child is in relation to that particular concept. And, for whatever, you know, and this is a case of adults being uncomfortable, because there's a lot of teachers that don't want to do standards-based grading. And probably there's really good reasons that they don't want to make that change.
Yeah.
But there's really good reasons they should consider something like that. And I'm not saying standards-based grading is the end-all, be-all. I don't think there is an end-all, be-all for things in education. I think it's a collection of things that we can try to continuously improve.
Well, and I think it's one of those things where, like, again, it's going to come down heavy on the administrator to really explain why we're doing something different than we've always done. And, you know, if it's just for the sake of being different, you know, that might not be the best. But if it really is what's best for the student at the end, explain it to me, because I might not get it. And I've done this way of grading for 13, 14, 30 years. Explain why we need to change it, because this is working, you know, so why are we changing it?
Right.
And I think that comes down on the administrator there.
Right. So I went with Sherry Gately. She said, I'm big on portfolios that collect a large variety of student work. I don't need or want a multiple choice test to determine / assess learning. I want my students to create. This truly demonstrates learning.
Yeah, man. I love portfolios too.
Yeah, they can be great.
Well done, Sherry. I like it. Well, question 11, last question of the night. How is your classroom or school different than the one you attended? Is it different?
So, Aaron, your current classroom is quite different than the one you grew up with, I'm guessing.
It's a little different. I do believe it would have kept me from being a high school dropout. Like, I do truly believe that if education could be done my way, I wouldn't have dropped out. But walls, seat time, on task time, it's vastly different. Different. How about you?
So the classroom that I'm teaching in, the course that I'm teaching is completely different than how I learned growing up, because I sat in the rows with the teacher at the front, and in my latest iteration of teaching style, I try really hard to not be the teacher at the front with a bunch of students in rows.
I like that. So. Claudia Swisher was not here the entire night, but she checked in for this one question.
She popped in to drop a knowledge bomb and then popped out.
She did. And so I really liked it. It wasn't that she's just the godmother of Oakle Ed, you know. But she's like, first of all, she said, missing the chat, but have an answer for A11. Electives.
Yeah.
Shop class, real choices for students, freedom to explore passions and find personal gifts. And I think that is so true. Like, we just don't have money for all of the different kinds of electives and the equipment that goes with those electives, you know, or the materials that go with those electives. And I think that she's right there. And I hope that's why the tech classes have become more, you know, prevalent, and being able to take college courses. Like, I don't remember that being an option whenever I was in high school at all. Was it an option when you were in high school?
Gosh, I mean, we were in high school sort of ish the same time, and I'm sure there was something. Yeah, much older. I'm sure there was something in there, but when I graduated, I didn't have any college credit.
No, I didn't either. And I mean, maybe it was because my people knew what kind of path I was on.
That Aaron Barnes, just get her out of here.
Mouths for her. So that college and tech weren't options for me. And I think maybe that too, you know, maybe if I had had more options available, but you know what? I still have the cutting board I made in seventh grade shop class. Like, I still have it, and it's pretty. And, you know, that's a product of an elective. And I really liked that class, not just because it was goof off, but like, I made birdhouses and things, and I can still run a saw. Like, you know, I can still do these things.
There's a legit long-term benefit for you.
Yeah. Like, I'm not scared of a lathe. I can use it. And I think that is huge. Like, it gave me, you know, something that if I ever really needed to fall back on furniture making, you know, I think that my husband and I could go into business together. So, anyway, I do think she's right. We got to provide more options for students, and maybe the tech route is the way to kind of take that pressure off of the public school system. But I just think that there should be more options. Mm-hmm. But who teaches them? We can't even fill the classrooms for science, math, social studies, and English.
Yeah, the quote unquote core classes.
Exactly. Yeah.
Crazy, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I went with Alan Lehman here, and he said, I graduated in 1986. The difference is night and day, way more than even 280 characters worth.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, it's kind of crazy. I went with something that was not technology or new age. You know, that tweet was so old school. And, you know, we talk about, like, shoot, I just read an article, like, that 40% of the jobs that we know of right now won't even be available 10 years from now because computers will be doing them, and it's going to be more creativity based. And so we've got this whole shift towards creativity, which is awesome, and technology, which is awesome. But shop class is hardly, you know, well, no, that is totally creativity, and you use pieces of technology to do it. So anyway, I just, it was interesting.
You know,
I miss a little bit of old school here.
Right. I mean, and if you think about it, you know, for example, those kids that are in high school right now, that they probably have a good idea of what career they want to go into. But I've got a daughter in fifth grade, and her career may just be in its infancy. You know, and so 7 years from now, when she graduates and then goes to college, maybe that career is now just getting started for realsies.
Yeah. Yeah.
And who knows what today's kindergartners are going to have opportunities to do. I mean, there's no way to know.
No way. Would you want to repeat Twyla's tweet from the Boom Saucy?
Yeah, so I picked Twyla's tweet as my Boom Sauce tweet. And basically she said, it's easy to become stagnant if you don't stretch yourself. As admin, I've got to model lifelong learning and continual growth so that the T's will do likewise. That'll move down to the students.
Yep. I love it.
There you go. I tried to do a search for what was coming up next week on the chat, but
I see Kristen Ashley, but I don't know what she's going to talk about.
Yes, she had shared that she was doing something, and I'm going to guess that it's counselor-ish related, because that's...
I mean, not necessarily. She is huge on, well, her and Stephanie did the trauma-informed, which I guess is counselor-y, you know, but it's something that doesn't have to happen in the counselor world. It can
right.
happen in your classroom. I just sent her a text. We'll see what she says.
Overall benefit of the child.
There you
or
go.
Or the
whole
teacher.
Child, whole school, you know, yes. You know, I sent her a private message this week on the Twitter because she called out a few of us for being just, you know, awesome people in her world.
She left me out of that tweet.
Yeah, well, work harder.
Maybe I need to become female, because she was actually calling out some great female leaders.
Yeah, and I wasn't trying to say
but
that.
Anyways.
I called her back out, and it was too long to put into a tweet. She has been, like, I do miss Johnny Ashley on the Twitter. I feel like they switched roles a little bit as far as the vocalization on the Twitter.
Right.
So we do miss you, Johnny Curriculum, like crazy.
Please
but
come back.
I'm so pleased to see Kristen's tweets. They are so kind and so thought-provoking and warm. And she was definitely an amazing addition to the Oakland Ed Twitter chats.
She, you know, she lurked for a long time, I think. And then has taken that step forward to be way more active. And I agree with you. I love it.
Yeah, she's a great addition.
So, right, so that, so some conversation she's leading is coming up.
And it will probably be hashtag amazeballs.
Hashtag you better believe it.
Okay, I'm totally going to tweet out in just a few minutes after I take a shower.
Ew.
Anyway, I'm going to tweet out a picture of my cutting board from middle school shop class. Okay, I'm going to tag Oklased and Oklaed and Claudia Swisher with that tweet.
Yes, I think you should.
Okay.
All right.
All right.
All right, educators, you know what to do. Go out and have a nice ice cold beverage by the pool.
No, that's not how it goes. That's not. But that is a great advice.
Okay.
Go out and dominate the world! Hello?
Yep. I thought you said last time you got a new something, something, something.
But I'm really sick of buying dongles.
Where do you plug stuff in?
I got a dongle.
We're only saying you're doing fine, Oklahoma, Oklahoma, okay.